WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Movies and TV shows have been turned into video games, but now a video game has become a film, Super Mario Brothers. I guess that's no surprise, considering one of the Mario games grossed over $500 million. The game's manufacturer, the Japanese Nintendo Company, made more profits from video game sales last year than the profits of all the movie studios combined. My guest David Sheff is the author of the new book, Game Over, How Nintendo Zapped an American Industry, Captured Your Dollars, and Enslaved Your Children. Now Nintendo is branching out into computer networks and virtual reality. Sheff decided to write his book after reading a survey that indicated more kids recognized Super Mario than Mickey Mouse.
There were Super Mario Saturday morning cartoons and after-school cartoons and Super Mario breakfast cereals and bed sheets and all kinds of things like that, and all the other everything else that came along, whether it was Batman or whether it was The Simpsons, they became Nintendo games. And then I started to hear teachers at not only my son's school, but at other schools that some friends of mine who just were also seeing that this thing was sort of becoming this, it was a subcult. And someone mentioned to me that the fact that while this was so pervasive, most adults didn't have a clue. And she's the one who first said the word. She talked about how we had grown up as a generation completely influenced by television. And what no one has caught on to yet is that there is a new generation emerging, which she called the Nintendo generation, kids who are being more influenced by electronic games and by interactive electronic entertainments than by television, or at least being influenced in a new and profound way.
I think it would be interesting to hear the history of a couple of the big video games. Why don't you tell us the story of Donkey Kong, which eventually led to the creation of Super Mario Brothers? Yeah.
Donkey Kong was designed by accident. Nintendo was a thriving company in Japan, and the son-in-law of the chairman was sent over to America to conquer the U.S. market as well. And there was a game that was sent over to America that was supposed to be their first big product, and it was a disaster. Kids hated it. And so the president of the Nintendo company in America pled with his father-in-law, Hiroshi Yamauchi, in Japan to send him a better game. But Yamauchi had all of his great top engineers working on other projects, and so he didn't have time to deal with it. So just to placate his son-in-law, he called in this man who was an artist. He had no experience in computers. He was not an engineer. He was hired only because his father was a friend of the chairman's, and they figured that they would have him paint some boxes of for video games and some advertisements and things like that. His name was Sugiro Miyamoto, and because he was not a traditional computer nerd, he had no experience in video games and no experience in computers. He came at it from a completely different approach, and instead of trying to figure out what he could do with the limited technology, he asked a lot of questions. Why are all the games the same? Why are it's all about pushing a button and shooting something, and then the thing gets destroyed? Why can't the games do more? Why can't the games tell stories? And he came up with all these fun characters from his notebook. As an artist, he came up with this funny gorilla and this carpenter wearing suspenders and a hat, intentionally trying to find an atypical hero, sort of a pudgy guy with he described him kind of as a Walter Mitty character, not necessarily somebody that we would normally think of as the hero of a video game. And he put this thing together and named it Donkey Kong. And when it was sent over from Japan to the American company, supposedly to save them, they were appalled. In fact, one of the engineers, one of the salespeople was so appalled that he quit. This was a time when all the games had names like Annihilate and Destroy and Kill and Murder. And here was a game that had come over from Japan that didn't involve any shooting, and it was called Donkey Kong. And these guys, they just thought it was a disaster. But Yamauchi, the chairman, told them to try to sell it, and it brought in Nintendo's first couple $100 million.
The way you describe it, Nintendo's strategy in terms of the marketing was to be willing to not make a lot of money on selling the hardware so that people would buy the Nintendo system, and then to really make a killing selling the software that you need Nintendo system for.
Yeah, and it's pretty, I mean, any parent with a persuasive child will tell you that that's exactly what happens. They might be convinced one Christmas after resisting for depending on how strong-willed the parent is, maybe resisting for a while, but normally people succumb. Now there are about 35 million Nintendo systems in American homes. More than one out of every three homes has one. So they'll buy the system, and now it costs about $100, which is a lot for a toy for a child, but that's just the beginning. What Nintendo knows is that once you've bought that system, that you, over the life of the system, until the next one comes along, so we're talking about in the course of about 3 or 4 years, a family will probably buy an average, the average of 10 or 11 games. Those games are each $40, $50. The new ones are about $70. So we're talking about an enormous investment. I mean, I don't know when, in what other time or in what other field, children are able to account for so much of a family's spending.
My guest is David Sheff, author of the new book, Game Over. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is David Sheff, author of a new book about Nintendo. The Nintendo hardware has been called by some a Trojan horse. Why?
Yeah. Just like the Trojan horse, there's something hidden inside the Nintendo system. I think a lot of adults would be surprised that if you pick up the video game system, the plastic box that's hooked up to the TV set, there's a panel on the bottom. And when you remove that panel, there is a port there, just like a port on the back of a computer. And it basically is saying the obvious, which is that the Nintendo system, even though it's considered a toy and a sort of an entertainment system for kids, is really a computer in disguise. Nintendo has plans to sell us peripherals that will make the Nintendo system do a lot more than just play games. In Japan, they've already released the Nintendo Network, and so children there can play games. A kid in Kyoto can play a game simultaneously against a kid in Tokyo. That's going to be expanded so that we'll be able to do that with every place around the world, pretty much. All over the United States, children will be playing games against one another and also against kids in Europe and in Japan. So Nintendo has come out with this system that has the potential to do all these things. And the reason it's really important is as companies are going to be coming out, we all hearing a lot of talk about the new multimedia industry and when videos, home movies are going to come out either on CDs or else over telephone lines, and we're going to be able to do our shopping over with the television set and order pizzas and play the stock market and do banking and all those kinds of things. There's a lot of companies that are going to come in and try to sell a product that will do that. And it'll probably cost $500 or $600. Well, Nintendo is going to then be able to come out with something that will just, for $100, you'll be able to hook it onto the system that you've already got because your kids are playing it. And they have a big advantage in the future, in this future industry, and they have a good chance of taking a big chunk of it.
Let's get back to the video games of the present. This week it was announced that Sega, one of the video games company, would start rating its videos, rating them for different age groups so that parents could determine if there was violence that they didn't want their children to be exposed to in a video game and so on. What are the more controversial games now in terms of sex and violence?
The video games have gone from these sort of magical, sort of wonderlands to pretty repulsive stuff. The biggest selling video game last year was called Street Fighter II, and in it you got to choose your character, and you chose from a gallery of about 6 or 8 of the most repulsive creatures you've ever seen, and these guys just basically beat each other up for as long as you can sit in front of the screen. And if you get really good at it, as a lot of 12 and 10 year olds will can show you, you can get your guy to jump on his opponent, grab him around the neck, and start biting his skull until blood spurts out. The game that is really controversial now is called Mortal Kombat, and it's a martial arts game, and it's got two guys, again, beating each other up, and the violence is just getting more extreme, and the graphics are getting better, which means it's more realistic. At the end of the game, if you win, if you beat up the other guy, that's not enough. You were told, finish him off, which I think is a pretty interesting message to give to kids. But you're told to finish him off, and then you have a choice. There's a sort of a menu of different ways you can finish him off. And some of the better ones are you can reach your hand into your opponent's chest and pull out his heart, which is still beating. Or you can rip off his, you can pull his head off of his shoulders and have so his spine is sort of jangling there. The irony of Sega coming out and saying that they want to rate video games is that their games are far more brutal and violent than any other companies, and to me, it's a smokescreen. They're basically trying to placate critics. The the reason that the games are getting so violent is because now it's so, the industry has gotten so big that it's so expensive to create a game that imaginative kind of, you know, wonderful games that someone might come up with are too risky for companies to bet all their millions of dollars on. And so what they do is they do just what happens in, you know, other entertainment forms, certainly in movies, and they go with the easy sells, which is, you know, the kids will respond if you give them violence, and so it seems like the video game designers are in a battle to see who can come up with, you know, bloodier, more gruesome ways to do violence.
You're a parent of a 9-year-old?
He's 10 now, yeah.
He's 10 now, okay. So do you control the video games that he watches and the amount of time that he watches, that he interacts with?
Yeah.
And do you have any say in which video games get let into the house and which ones you think are, you know, too violent or too sexist or whatever?
Definitely. At first I didn't. And then I started paying more attention. And I realized that, first of all, as far as the content is concerned, I don't want my son sitting in front of a screen. First of all, I don't want him sitting in front of a screen that much anyway, but when he is sitting in front of a screen, I don't want him to be wasting his time just, you know, pushing a button as fast as he can, and so that he won't be murdered, which is really what the bottom line is to a lot of these games. So I definitely get involved in the games. I mean, there's a game called, for instance, Mario Paint, which is it's magical. I mean, it's basically a you can create characters, you can animate them, and you can score them with everything from trumpets and drums to pig snorts, and it's just it's fabulous. I only let him play a half an hour a day, which makes me very unpopular. His friends, he always used to like to come over our house to spend the night, but they don't want to come over anymore because they want to sit there and play. And when I tell him finally his half hour is over, he'll get furious with me and he'll throw himself on the floor and he'll roll around and he'll tell me that I'm the worst parent on the planet. But then 10 minutes later, he's doing something else. He's drawing or he's building something or he's outside playing with a puppy or climbing in a tree or something like that. One thing that's pretty interesting is that I was thinking about this. It's an old story about people in of the generation of parents of these kids, of these video game addicted kids. When we were kids, after school we'd go outside and we'd play and we'd go down to the park and we'd hang out with our friends until we were called in for dinner. These kids, especially kids in urban centers, but even in suburban places a lot around this country, are never allowed to play outside on their own. It's a whole new world out there. Parents are too scared that something's going to happen to their kids. And so maybe this sort of new form of entertainment, this sort of you know, bringing in all these sports games, for instance, into the living room, so kids are playing football and baseball while they're sitting in front of the TV set and playing all these video games, maybe it's a reflection of something that's going on in the culture. Certainly not saying it's a good thing, but maybe it's a response in a way to the fact that kids just can't be outside on their own.
I'm going to end on a note that's, this is so stupid, perhaps only I, someone who's never played Super Mario Brothers, could ask, but what does it mean? Are the Mario Brothers super? Are their last names Mario, so they're like the Gross Sisters or the Mario Brothers? I mean, am I missing something?
No, it's a good question. It makes no sense at all. Mario and Luigi are the brothers. I don't even know if they have a last name. All they did was they came up with Mario. Mario was a big hit. Kids loved him. And so that the programmers could differentiate a partner for him so that there could be two players at one time, they came up with a guy who, while Mario is short and fat, his brother, Luigi, is tall and thin, and one of them is wearing red suspenders and the other one's wearing green suspenders. There's no reason for it at all. There's the reason that they have hats is because the programmers in Japan couldn't figure out a way to deal with the inertia that way. If a character would jump on the video game screen and he would be falling down, his hair would fly up. The reason they have hats is because they didn't want to deal with the flying hair.
Yeah, but the hat could have fallen off. Do the hats have chin straps?
Yes, it does. Yes, these hats are glued on.
David Sheff is the author of the new book, Game Over.